is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
To Edinburgh, Scotland, Simon Constable, reporting for Barron's and Forbes and the Wall Street Journal and other distinguished publications, observing now the weather and the virus in Scotland and in Northern Europe, because both have taken a turn. The weather is fleeting, but worth noting that a storm named Arwen swept through the Scotland and tumbled electricity, making it very inconvenient for a number of properties. This is how Scotland opines what's happened in the storm last night. A number of properties without electricity. First Minister moving very quickly, Nicola Sturgeon. I mention the First Minister because Scotland has a local government that is very active. Active especially because after this storm comes the winter and snow in Northern Europe, and prices for natural gas have been spiking for weeks. But at the same time comes an unwelcome visitor for the holidays with a Greek name, Omicron. Omicron is new to everyone, including Scotland. So, Simon, a very good day to you. I see in Prime Minister's questions in London, the question of what is to be done again and again, especially by the opposition. Within these last hours, and you'll update me on this, the First Minister has said either 9 or 14 cases have been identified in Scotland. So what is your understanding of what is going to change for you in Edinburgh? It's been weeks since we worried about masking and registering and travel because Delta had swept through us like the angel of death. However, what do you know this morning about your prospects for the holiday season, knowing how Christmas is important to everyone in Scotland? Good evening to you, Simon.
Good evening to you, John. One of the things I think we were all hoping for was that Scotland would come out and say you don't need to wear a mask if you go into a restaurant or a cafe or anything like that. That is not going to happen anytime soon. We will still have to keep wearing masks. England, south of the border, has switched back to requiring masks. We never got out of having to have them. So I now have a very good collection of neckerchiefs that I use to mask myself, and we'll be continuing to use those. The other thing is we'll be having to take these PCR tests if we go abroad. It looks like both before and after, definitely after. And that's an expensive option for a lot of people. So it will make that that getting out of Scotland for some winter sun even more expensive than it will be anyway. So both of those things we know. What else? We don't know yet. And everyone I know is just hoping that the Scottish government doesn't shut down businesses and say you can't operate or you have to close down or you have to work from home. Some guidance would be fine, I think, but actually requiring people to do things like not go to work would, I think, be a final straw for many people.
There are positive reports from the health minister in London. 3 COVID vaccine doses, enough to protect against Omicron variant. This is a quote from Israel that has closed its borders. Simon, I have had 3 jabs. I believe you have as well. Is that correct?
Yes, I got a booster this Sunday. It's knocked me out for a little while, but I feel fine now, and hopefully that protects me.
The reason I ask is that 3 has become normative here in vaccine-rich America. Is it normative for Scotland and for England that people have had 3 jabs?
It's not normal for them to have had 3 jabs, but it is becoming normal. And on Sunday, and this was just after the news of the Omicron variants coming out, the place where you can get the jabs for free was mobbed. And that was really quite incredible. We were being told there's a 2-hour wait. That turned out not to be true. I think that was scaremongering. Got through very, very smoothly and quickly. But people want this. People don't want to have to stay home or not be allowed into a pub or a restaurant. So they're getting with the program. There is much lower levels of anti-vax rhetoric in this country. There is some of it, but much lower levels than in other countries. We're a fairly compliant population.
The concern in Europe is about the virus coming from other parts of the world, especially outside the EU. That would be the United Kingdom. And I see that the president of the EU is now indicating, in addition to the regular procedures, an enhanced question of testing before you arrive in the continent. Europe is always taking an opportunity to remind us that you're no longer the same governance. Have you noticed this? Whenever a new version of the virus precaution shows up, Ms. van der Leyen wants to make it clear that Britain will follow these rules just as if you were America.
Absolutely. We have not been lost on that. That's been actually quite entertaining. It was especially entertaining when the AstraZeneca vaccine came out. And of course, Britain had access to many, many, many more doses than mainland Europe. And they were pretty upset about that. So, you know, and I know, but not everybody knows this, is that Britain and France have been rivals for the last 1,000 years, which, you know, isn't likely to go away anytime soon. And this is just the latest latest thing that we've got to deal with. And if it's not this, it'll be something else, because that's what France and Britain like to do. They like to bicker at each other.
Yes, and here's the twist. France and Britain bicker, but it's really about England and France. Scotland has a special place in the French opinion making. And it's been a puzzle to me until you remember Bonnie Prince Charlie and Culloden and the massacre at Culloden by the English troops. People might marvel that there is such a long memory, but for the year I spent in Edinburgh very happily, I learned that the Scots don't forget anything, not a thing.
I would remind you, John, you know this to be true, having lived here, and I lived in America for a very long time. In Britain, 100 miles is a long way. In America, 100 years is a long time. And if you can switch that around, you know, 100 years isn't very long in Europe, because basically everything goes back to the Romans. And, you know, 100 miles is nothing in America because it's a huge, huge country.
The positive news out of the prime minister is that he wants people to go forward with their holiday parties, although he doesn't want excessive incaution to be excessive. I think that is his clever way of saying, don't drink too much and forget your mask and forget where you are. So what we have here is an opportunity to cite that without adequate information about Omicron, Britain and Scotland are getting ready for a worst case scenario, but haven't gone to that first. So let's move to something that you wrote about most recently, Simon, when looking at the market. The only thing that matches the turmoil of the virus is the stock market these days. You have published in Forbes and other distinguished publications that you like this market, but what aspect of this market is taking it higher, Simon? Given Mr. Powell has now banned the word transitory, I think, from the lexicon of the Federal Reserve. So what attracts Mr. Constable?
What's interesting to me is a couple of reports I read both pointed to stocks being higher by year end. One was based on a historical analysis by CFRA, they're a research firm in New York City. And they were saying that basically, even though we saw from the October lows, we'd seen quite a decent rally. This was a couple of weeks ago. We're likely on a historical basis to see even more of a rally by the time we get to December 31st. Now, that really doesn't tell you that much, but that when you put it together with other stuff, which is what Ed Yardini of Yardini Research, and he's a Wall Street veteran, was saying, and he was pretty interesting here. That what he said was that, look, consumers in America have managed to save something like $2.9 trillion over the period of the pandemic. Now, that is an enormous amount of money. That's something close to the size of the entire British economy. So it's a lot of money, and Americans like to spend. So when that money gets unleashed in a supermarket or online, it will cause an amazing boom, and that will also cause company earnings to go up, which will then cause the stock market to rally. At least that's my interpretation of what he says. And the other thing is, we've got plenty of money to act as lubricant for the U.S. economy, and we do need cash, not just physical cash, but also electronic cash, to make the economy move smoothly. Both these things are very, very good signs that the stock market isn't anywhere near a fall. Now, of course, this doesn't mean it can't fall if we get a full lockdown, but I think every politician with even sort of an unsavvy view of the world will know that with the midterms coming up in 2022, no one wants to really upset the electorate, given lots of things that have happened lately. So we have inflation, which is a problem. We have the humiliating withdrawal from Afghanistan, and the employment situation is weird at the moment, in a way that me you've probably never seen before. Anyway, I think that's it. Basically, the market is probably going up by year end, and that's a good thing.
Yes, Simon has some numbers here for people who follow very close to the S&P 500. This is Yardeni quoted. My targets for the index are 4,800 by the end of this year. It's around 46.5 right now. 5,200 for 2022, 5,200. And 5,500 for 2023. There's no room in there for failure. So Ed Yardeni, whom I've followed for many years, and Simon has as well, is saying that this cash bounty is going to continue to push. And I mentioned, Simon, we also have inflation at the same time. But as of yet, the inflation is a monster that we worry about, but it hasn't damaged the market. Are you surprised by that, Simon?
I am surprised by that. One of the things I would say is we haven't got anything like near where it was in the 70s. So it isn't double digit yet. Now people say, you know, 5-6% is not good inflation, and it's high. It is high for the last 3 decades. I would have to agree that would be considered high, particularly if it's sustained, and it looks like it will be sustained. But it's nothing like it was, say, in Britain in the 1970s, when I think at one point it got up to 25% annualized rate, which is a really phenomenally high rate. And I know it got to double digits in the US as well. We are not there yet. And hopefully the Federal Reserve is savvy enough to act quickly, if it needs to crush inflation. If it does get up near double digits, that would be a major, major problem.
I'm speaking with Simon Constable. He is in Edinburgh, Scotland, where they're awaiting news about Omicron, and Britain will wait news of Omicron, as we will here in America. They have cases in Britain. They have cases in Scotland. There are a number of reports out of mainland Europe. There are barriers being constructed or reconstructed right now. But when we come back, we're going to address the markets. Simon has observed about the energy market. Simon has observed about the real estate market, especially how it's influenced by Chinese real estate. It's one of those things that even though there's the four horsemen of the apocalypse riding, we've got to carry on with market investment. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.